Years ago, one of my favorite groups, and now this is going to... Almost the Beatles, just slightly after them, ABBA. So, yeah, not the same, no. So ABBA came out and they had a song. Money, 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 it's a rich man's world. And anyway, and it's a topic that some people hate anyone to talk on. It's as soon as someone gets up to preach on it, everyone thinks, oh dear. And I used to have a friend who used to go to one of the more sort of churches that fought strongly, taught strongly on tithing and prosperity and that. And what he used to do, when he got out of his car, he used to take his wallet out and leave it in the car, because he thought, you know, when he got in there, he's not sure what he's going to give away. It's a But you know, money is an interesting topic, isn't it, money? When I was at school, we did a subject called commerce. And in commerce, they taught us about the four necessities of life: food, water, air, and clothing. And it's interesting that you've got all of those. And what they didn't mention was money, though that became then the whole topic was, should money be one of the necessities of life? And it's interesting, if you go to the Bible has an interesting verse on this. I mean, it's in Ecclesiastes 10, verse 19. I'm doing it from the New Living Translation, where it says, a party gives laughter, wine gives happiness, and money gives everything. If you go to the ESV translation, another translation, it says, money is the answer to everything. That's from the Bible. Whoa, what's going on here? But in actual fact, have you ever noticed that money is something that's needed? You know, we hate money. We don't want to talk about money. We don't want someone to bring it up. But in actual fact, without money, we can't operate. It's Mother Teresa has a wonderful ministry she did. She's obviously passed on now, but she had a wonderful ministry she was doing to the poorest of the poor. And the one thing that she used to try and do is not focus on finances. But you want to know something? To minister to the poorest of the poor, she needed money. She needed finances. She needed resources. She needed things to help. We need money to actually survive. There's many a dream and many a plan that people have that collapses because of lack of finances. You know, I was an accountant for a long time doing, we did our own business. We called it Clark Secretarial back in Zimbabwe. And we used to do books for people. But many people would come to you with all their dreams about what they were going to do and what they were going to achieve and where they were going to end up. And they would tell you all their plans. And within a year, you'd notice that they weren't there anymore. And if you spoke to them and said, what had happened? The finances had dried up. It was the finances hadn't come through, or they'd needed more finances than they actually anticipated. So money is, so what is the right way to view money? I've called the title of this message, Money, Money Everywhere, and Not a Penny to Spend. Because when we look around us, we see this world is full of money. I mean, it is. You can use it on the internet and everywhere else, but how much of it do you actually have access to? And if you have access to it, what do you do with it? Because it's how we spend and how we save our money that actually makes a big difference. Two scriptures that I think that people love to quote when it comes to finances, which I think serve to prove a point. One is Matthew 6, verse 24, where it says, no man can serve two masters. He will either hate the one, he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. And that becomes very true. When we come to money, it's interesting that money is something that we all need, but the question we often have to ask ourselves is, do you own the money, or does the money own you? You know, is money the one that's actually directing what you're doing, or is it something, you know, if you take Christ when he came with the Sabbath, you know, this God gave the Sabbath to man to be a blessing so that we could learn to rest. That it's not all about work. We need to take time out to rest and spend it with God. And yet, in the end, people turned that around and they started beating people on the head with, you're not allowed to do this on the Sabbath and you can't do that. And they came up with all these regulations that they made the Sabbath more work than resting. And he says, you know, the Sabbath wasn't made for man. Man was made for the Sabbath. And it's the same with finances. Money is actually something that is for us. The other scripture that Paul writes, which people love to misquote, and I will come back to it at the end, but is 1 Timothy 6, verse 10. And it says, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. But notice that it's not money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money that is the root of all evil. So I thought I would actually just take a look at money as this. It's there will be aspects I'm going to sort of take us to, obviously some principles. But to start with, where did money come from? Why do we even have money in the world? I mean, this is something that, do you know that no one actually knows where it originally came from? There are a lot of theories, by the way. I even had one theory given to me about how the Jews actually started it during the time when they were doing business, and they're the ones that got usury growing and when they could lend to people and that. But in actual fact, if you trace money back, we can physically trace money back at least 5,000 odd years. We've got a record of some form of currency in the world. What I love is that, of course, in the Bible, we have the story of the first couple, Adam and Eve. And you know that they were put in a garden, and then it describes the garden. And you, don't turn there, but if you want to note it, it's in Genesis 2:12. It actually states there that in that garden, there was gold and precious stones. Can you believe that, eh? I mean, it was mentioned at the time of Adam and Eve, gold in that was mentioned as being part of where they were. We also know that when we come to Abraham, Abraham is described as being a wealthy man. And when he wanted to bury his wife, he actually had to go to someone to buy a piece of land, which means people at the time of Abraham, they actually owned property. They actually had wealth. And he bought the land with shekels. He actually used finances to do it. So we have, in the Bible, we have a record that, of money going all the way back. Now, of course, we have an idea that money may be started because when man first came along, they wanted to trade things. Now, let me tell you, we learnt about this in Zimbabwe. So when Jeanette and I were sort of in Zimbabwe, we went through something called hyperinflation. Does everyone here know what hyperinflation is? I can see nobody knows what hyperinflation is. Okay, hyperinflation. So inflation is when the business, you know, if you have something that's worth $10 this year, inflation means that next year it'll be worth $11 or $12. You pay more for it, so you spend more on your groceries than you did the year before. Now, that's okay when you've got, like, it can go up by 5%, and that's what, remember, we're actually at the moment, the bank, we're having talks in this country about how it's now got to 6% and something, and we even got to double digits briefly, and everyone's having a nightmare here. Well, let me tell you, that's all just called inflation. Once you get to over 100%, you enter something called hyperinflation. It's where it's more than 100%. As a matter of fact, you'd go to a shop, and if you picked up an item in the shop, from the time you picked it up at the till to when you got to the till to pay for it, it was more expensive than it was when you picked it up. That's hyperinflation. So that's what Jeanette and I had to live through. But because of this, you end up not trading with money because money is just worthless. So you end up bartering. And we ended up, but you end up with an interesting problem. Like, for example, I was thinking of the chicken. Did we have the chicken or the bread? We had the bread. We had a loaf of bread, and you couldn't get bread. And this friend of ours had a chicken. And she was after bread. We were after a chicken. So we swapped. But you see the problem, of course, is bread really the same value as a whole chicken? And of course, that's where currency comes in. And we get finances being used. So finances were needed to actually help us to put value on things and for us to be able to trade and exist. So money in itself is not good or bad. It is just is. It's a thing. How we use it becomes whether it's good or bad. Now, what's interesting is I came across this site. Now, this is not a Christian, and it's not talking about Christian things. But of course, where we can see our view on money is how we spend it and how we save it. Now, here's what the site said. It came up with 7 personality types when it comes to money. The compulsive saver, the one who sees money as a sense of security. So they're always saving because of something that could happen. So they're continually saving to be secure against the future. The compulsive spender. The one who goes out and just buys an impulse, sees something and buys it. We have some friends who are like that. Every time they go into a shop, you know they're going to come out with a whole pile of stuff. You know, they spend as they go. The compulsive money maker, the one whose focus is always on profit. They're wanting to make a profit. They're wanting to make a deal. They're wanting to somehow get the money in and improve their lifestyle. Then there are those, it says, that are indifferent to money. What I love is the comment they made here was, generally, it's only the rich who say this. You know, the rich say, oh, I don't really think about money. It's not something I think about. It's generally, if you've got enough of it, you don't have to worry about it. The saver splurger, those who save up a lot of money and then go blow it on something. And that could be where we sort of fall a little bit into that category. The gambler, the one who takes his money and will risk it on a sort of a throw of a dice or on some gamble that they're going to do. Those sort of people I find either have lots of money or they're deep in debt. They seem to swing from one to the other. And then there's where 99.999% of all of us are. the worrier, the one that is constantly worried about losing their money and their finances. But what? So that's the world's thing on this. But where? What do we do with money? What do we do with it? It's something we need. I want to take you. Did any of you ever see the film Fiddler on the Roof? And there's a guy in there called, I don't know how to pronounce the name, Tevye? Yeah. And anyway, Tevye, he actually has a song that he sings that he became very famous with. As a matter of fact, Roger Whittaker then took it later on and became famous with it. And then when he starts the song, he's praying to God, and he says, "It is no shame to be poor, but it's no great honor either." And I think that's very true, isn't it? It is no shame to be poor. That's something that I think is important to know. Now, the name Tevye, funny enough, means what we were singing just now, the goodness of God. But it is something that I think that you'll find in the Bible, is the Bible has a lot to say about the poor and has a lot to say about the wealthy. But you want to know something? That you can be poor and struggling and be righteous and rich with God. You can be wealthy and have everything and be poor with God. But you can also be poor and struggling and be poor with God. You can also be rich and wealthy and be rich with God. Your wealth doesn't actually indicate your standing with God. Now, sometimes we can look down on the poor, and God actually doesn't want us to do that. He wants us to care for the poor. But in actual fact, your standing with wealth is not an idea of you're really blessed because you're wealthy. Let me tell you, I've seen some very wealthy people that are evil. We came across a lot of them in Zimbabwe. So your wealth is not an indication of your righteousness with God or your blessing with God. God can bless you with wealth, but that's not an indication of it, if you follow what I'm saying. It's not saying that God, if you do something, which we'll come to, God can bless you with that, but we can't measure people like that. God looks at the inner man. So I want to then give us 3 points that we can actually take away with God, with this, in this thing, and 3 lessons we can actually learn and run with. The first, realize you are merely a steward of God's possessions and learn to be content. Now, I want to quote Job here. Now, Job, of course, was a wealthy guy. Now, God had blessed him, and God had blessed him with a huge lot of finances, had blessed him with children, blessed him with a family, had blessed him in the area that he was. People used to come to him for his wisdom and all that he was doing. So he was being blessed by God, and then he lost everything. With a space of a very short period, he lost his children, he lost his wealth, he lost his business, he lost his home, and his health became attacked as well. He got covered in boils. And his wife came to him and said, "Why don't you just curse God and die?" And in Job 1, verse 21 and 22, he says this, and he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, naked shall I return. The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away, blessed be the name of the Lord." And in all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. Now, it's not that he just accepted his fate, because that's where we can end up sort of thinking. But it was that he had an understanding that everything he had come from God. So if everything you had has come from God, all you are doing is caring for what God has actually blessed you with, what you have actually been given. And Paul goes on to talk about this as well. If you want to turn to Philippians chapter 4, and if you realize that you're a steward, now you might say, "Oh, but there are things that I have. I've got skills." Do you know that God gave you those skills? You could say, "Oh, well, I actually have made quite a lot of money." God's given you that money. You know, "I've got a lot of resources." God's given you those resources. And if you realize they've been given by God, you can hold them very lightly. Because that's the difficulty, is when we start holding them and holding them tight, that's when, instead of them being a blessing from God, they become an idol. And that they become something that God needs to deal with. But if we hold them lightly, it doesn't mean sort of, I'll talk about this, but it doesn't mean that we just squander them. Being a steward means that you manage them well. You manage them. God actually, if you go through the parables, you'll find a lot of the parables are to do with finances and profit, which is interesting that. I mean, there's something we avoid talking about. But God has given us things so that we can manage it, so that he can actually, we can be a blessing to others. That we can pass that on. Let's look at Philippians chapter 4 and verses 10 to 15. Now in this, the people in Philippi were poor. They didn't have a lot. Paul had gone there, he had planted a church, and then he had gone out from there. And when he had gone out, the only people who were supporting him were the people from this church in Philippi. But they weren't wealthy, and now they knew he was in trouble and they wanted to help him again, and he had no access to being able to do that. So if you look at Philippians chapter 4 from verse 10, It says, I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at length you have revived your concern for me. You were indeed concerned for me, but had no opportunity. Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am, to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I've learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Yet it was kind of you to share my trouble. And you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me, giving and receiving, except you only. Notice that he can do anything. Now, the anything, by the way, we often use that quote because, you know, you've got a task ahead of you. You can do it because you can do anything if God is with you. What he's actually talking about here is not the task you're doing. He's saying you can face any situation if God is with you. You can face poverty. You can face wealth. Do you want to know that there is as much a trial and temptation in having wealth as there is in being poor? Both of them are bad. You know, it's a, both of them are things where we can actually turn away from God in. But both of them are ways we can actually celebrate God in as well. And so he's saying here that they need to learn to be content. Being content, by the way, doesn't mean, and this is a thing, that some people can say, okay, so being content means I just accept the situation I'm in. That's not being content. Being content is actually being content with God. It's allowing God to work with you. Because he actually, if you look in, I think it's in Corinthians, where he talks about, you know, you were born a slave. He says, you know, be content in your situations. But if you can get your freedom, get it. You know, it's we need to actually know that it doesn't mean we don't improve our lifestyle. It doesn't mean we have goals that we're aiming for, but be content with how God actually has presented them to you and how you actually go through it. It means not actually putting all your faith in those things so that if they do fail, it's not the end of the world. You can carry on. But we can trust God in what he's actually doing. And that brings us, so that's being a steward. To me, that is the key. If you've got that understanding that you are in this world and you are stewarding what God has given you, that means it's important that you actually look after it well and that you use it as a blessing to others, which I'll come to just now. But it's not something that you don't squander it and you don't just hoard it. It's not just, you know, you're not blessed by God, because some people see a blessing of God as something that we hoard to ourselves. God never blesses you just for you to hoard. He always blesses you to be a blessing. And so that brings me to the next part, the next point I would like to make. So the first one being, if I can just see where I wrote it again, realize you are merely a steward of God's possessions and learn to be content. The second is partner with God in your financial plans through tithes, giving, and savings. And in Deuteronomy, it actually speaks about three different tithes that we can have. Maybe let me read through this first, and then I'll go into it. So it's quite a long passage, Deuteronomy 14, verse 22. Now, he's talking here to a nation that actually was a nation that could come in and they were being ruled. So these were rules also for a nation. But in Deuteronomy 14, 22, he says, you shall tithe all the yield of your seed that comes from the field year by year. And before the Lord your God, in the place that he will choose to make his name dwell there. And you shall eat the tithe of your grain, of your wine, of your oil, and the firstborn of your herd and flock, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. And if the way is too long for you, so that you are not able to carry the tithe where the Lord your God blesses you, because the place is too far from you, which the Lord your God chooses to set his name there, then you shall turn it into money, and bind up the money in your hand, and go to the place that the Lord your God chooses. Now notice this. And spend the money for whatever you desire, oxen or sheep or wine or strong drink, whatever your appetite craves. And you shall eat there before the Lord your God and rejoice, you and your household. You shall not neglect the Levite who is within your towns, for he has no portion or inheritance with you. At the end of every 3 years, you shall bring out all the tithe of your produce in the same year and lay it up within your towns. And the Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance with you, and the sojourner and the fatherless and the widow who are within your towns, shall come and eat and be filled, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands that you do. Now this passage is quite difficult, in that there's a lot of people now wrestle with what it's actually telling you. So this is my sort of way of understanding it, is that there were basically three tithes that they did. The first tithe was they actually gave the 10% to the temple. And that's your first fruit that you actually give. You giving that across. The second was they used that for actually going on their holidays, as it were, where they used to go to, for once a year, they used to go to Jerusalem to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles or to celebrate the Passover. And part of that, they would actually use that tithe to do that. And when they went there, they would also use it to pay for the trip. So they pay for the food that they had to eat there, pay for the things that they were doing. So it actually became something that they had actually could use for that. The third tithe they then used to support the people that were in need, the poorest in the place, those that are weak, the Levites who had no inheritance, and the widows and the fatherless and that sort of thing. And so I'll just go through each of these, but I thought to start with, the first thing that they did though in all of that is they tithed to the temple. Now, Jeanette actually shared something with me on this about our tithing that I thought was actually quite appropriate to share now, so...
So this is going to be like a 30-second little pause on Ken's preach. we were just talking about tithing and how people today see it and how it can be something that people are afraid to do or have incorrect ideas. And I was saying to Ken that for me, tithing is I put into the place that is feeding me. The place where I have my friendships, my relationships, the place where I know people are praying for me, all those different things, the place that I know that God has placed me. And so for me, that would be this church because that's where I'm being fed. And a picture that I got from that was, and it, you might laugh at it, is I go shopping at Tesco. So if we have the place that we would normally go shopping at, do we go pay Asda? You don't do that, do you? If you've bought your food at Tesco, you pay Tesco. If you've bought your food at Asda, you pay for Asda. So for me, when God has placed you within a community of people, that is the place that you put your tithe into. That is the place that he has given you the protection over. He's got the elders and the people, the leaders all there around and supporting you. So for me, that is where your tithe goes. Anything else, all of us may have charities or interests beyond our church. That is given from what I call your overflow. That is something that God urges you and prompts you to do, but it is different to what you place within the church. And just a practical tip, if I wait to see what my bank account says I have in the bank, I will never pay my tithe because I know that my outgoings on a large, many months are more than my incomings. So I have a debit order on my account. That money goes out whether I think I can afford it or not. And then I adjust my balance according to that and adjust what I pay for so that I'm not going to be doing little Amazon shops or dropping by the shop and thinking, oh, that's nice, let me grab that. That then comes from the overflow outwards.
Amen. 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 So you actually, and remember putting this together with our first point, you're a steward of God's money. You're actually not giving God money. You're just returning to him what was already his. Remember, you are a steward of what he has actually blessed you. He has promised, though, if you do that, that you're in partnership with him. You're a co-worker with him. And let me tell you, there's a partner you want in your business. There's a partner you want on your side is God, the one who owns everything, the cattle on 1,000 hills, the one who's able to actually change circumstances so that you actually do well and bless you. So we need to partner with God in our plans through tithes. But then I take the principle, by the way, we are not under the old covenant where they had all these three tithing systems. We don't have the three tithing systems now. But we have the principles that they've actually given us. Returning the 10% to God is still something that is God's desire, that we actually return to him what it is. He is part of what we're doing. It's an act of faith. You're not giving it, by the way, to the church that you're in. You don't giving it to the individuals. You're returning that to God. Okay, so the second thing you do is I look at giving. So I've turned them around a little bit on what we looked at here. But once you've tithed, you then look at actually how you can help others. Because, you know, if you take, some people say, so the 10% you give to God and the 90% is mine. No, none of it is yours. It all belongs to God. 10% you give to God. With the other 90%, you've got to look at what you've got to do with it. Now, I do believe, as Christians, we have to look after our family. You know, as a matter of fact, it says if you don't look after your family, you're like a non-believer. Can you believe that, eh? If you're not looking after your kids and your wife or your husband, that you know, God actually classes you as a non-Christian. You know, it's we've got to care for the those that are closest to us. But we need to realize that our family is actually bigger than that. Our family is actually the Christians that are here. We need to care for those that are in need within us. But then as Christians, unfortunately, we go a step further than that. We need to be caring for those in the world. We should be praying blessing on even our enemies. So think of someone who's your enemy. Would you be prepared to bless and help them? Well, as a Christian, I think that's where we need to get to, where we're actually wanting the best for what is for others. And that's giving. So that's tithing, giving. And I think all of us should have tithing as a part of our budget, but we should have giving as part of our budget as well. It's, you know, so that we're able to actually have that attitude of looking outwards. But then there's a third aspect of that, savings. They actually took that money and they used it to travel. But you, what we used to, when I was part of another church that actually did that, we used to save up to travel to places for things like that. For a church conference, we used to keep the Feast of Tabernacles and Passover at special places. We used to put aside 10% of our income every month for that. And let me tell you, it's amazing how quickly you actually accumulate the money to be able to do that. God wants you to save. God wants you to see the storm that's coming and prepare for it, but not out of fear. So that's the second point. So the first is remember that you're a steward. The second is make God your partner. The third is to use wisdom in how you spend and how you save, but always be generous. God actually wants you to be generous. He talks about in Corinthians, he talks about he loves a cheerful giver. And a cheerful giver, you sort of see someone skipping along to go give something. And I don't know if a lot of people come skipping up to the front here to put their offering and tithe in, but you know, often we should. We should be skipping along because we're a cheerful giver. But let me tell you, have you ever seen someone giving a present to somebody and they know that they've now got a present that that person really wants? And especially little kids, you'll see them getting all excited. No, open it now. You know, it's because they're excited about what you're getting. That's how I picture we should be in giving. You know, we're doing it not for ourselves. We're doing it to bless outwards. And so we need to learn to be generous. Now, I had a quote here, and this quote challenged me. Ambrose of Milan, he was the Bishop of Milan back in about 370 AD. So this is quite a long time ago. So it's at a point in time when the church had been persecuted. It's now come out of the persecution. It's now become part of the state religion. So it's now, it's almost accepted. It still was going through a period of where they were adjusting. But and he was now a bishop in this period. And he has this quote: "If you have two shirts in your closet, one belongs to you and the other to the man who has no shirt." Do you know, that was quite a challenge to me because I then opened my closet to have a look at all the shirts that I never wear. You know, and just in case, you got them just in case. Again, we have to use wisdom with this. And so I'd like to end by looking at that passage in Timothy, that we sort of quoted, the 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting in from verse 2. And I'm going to start from halfway through verse 2. So if you have a look at the passage you got there, there's a little gap. I'm going to start at the very end of that, where it says, "Teach and urge these things." And then verse 3. "If anyone teaches a different doctrine and does not agree with the words, sound words of our Lord Jesus Christ and the teaching that accords with godliness, he is puffed up with conceit and understands nothing. He has an unhealthy craving for controversy and for quarrels about words, which produce envy, dissension, slander, evil suspicions, and constant friction among people who are depraved in mind and deprived of the truth, imagining that godliness is a means of gain." And that's sad. There's so many people I see which will twist godliness to make a profit. They will actually manipulate money out of you because and saying, "Oh, but this is how you'll bless God." And unfortunately, I've seen people say that, where, you know, "Give this money to me and you'll be blessed." That's never how God actually works. So we can't turn it into forcing profit. But notice verse 6, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." Why? And he goes back to what Job said. "For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction." And verse 10, "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. But for you, O man of God, flee these things. pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, steadfastness, gentleness. Fight the good fight of faith. Take hold of eternal life to which you were called and about which you have made the good confession in the presence of many witnesses. We're called to live the Christian life, but let's do it with wisdom. Learn to be content, but we need to be wise in how we actually deal with our money. But in all of it, learning to be generous. You know, I always remember we had in our church, we had Jeanette and I were, I think it was when we were, I don't know if it was when we were coming across here or if we had planned to travel overseas, and the church was going through a period where the finances were really slim. So we didn't really have the money to do it. So Jeanette and I were digging out all our savings to try and get enough money to actually do this trip. And we had one lady in the church who we knew was struggling. We knew had nothing. You know, she used to sell vegetables on the side of the road to try and make enough money just to pay for her to make ends meet. And she came up to us as she heard that we were doing this. And you know that where someone shakes your hand and then they take the hand away and you suddenly find you've got a note left in your hand? Never happened to any of you? Okay, well that's so that's what she did to me. And she'd given me, and I forget what it was, £20. That she gave us. Let me tell you, I actually believe she gave us more than anyone else had given us. Even though it might not have been a huge thing, but I actually, she gave from her poverty. She was generous from her poverty. And that's what God calls us to do. He calls us to be generous, not to be unwise. I mean, there was a period, there's a lot of poverty in Zimbabwe. And so in winter, a lot of people going around dressed like this, and they struggle with the cold. So we had a lot of them realizing I'm a pastor. They'd come at our gate, and they would knock on the gate, and they'd say, look, they've got no food, no clothes, and all this. And I'd look at them and feel sorry for them, and I'd give them a jersey. And this was happening for a while, and Jeanette just kept quiet. She's quite a good wife. And anyway, so now we come to winter, and I go to my cupboard, and I'm saying, Jeanette, I've got no jerseys. She says, well, you gave them all away. So we've got to be wise as well. You know, God doesn't call us to not use wisdom in doing this. But at the same time, learn to be generous. Remember that God, you will never outgive God. And you know that by helping the poor and by helping people in need, you're in effect giving to God. You know, it's by doing that. If you're giving to someone who can never, ever repay you, that is giving to God. If you give to someone who will give it back to you, that's just lending. But if you're actually helping those that can never repay you, that is giving to God. And let me tell you, God will never be a debtor to anyone. He will actually make sure that you will never do it and say, oh, I've now outgiven God. I forget who it was. Someone actually said he's got a bigger shovel than we've got. You know, we're doing it with a little shovel, but he's doing it with a big shovel. You'll never outgive God. So in conclusion, money, money, money. God does not need your money, but he will use your money to find out what your heart is like. Because you want to know, look at people's money and what they do with it, and you can see where their heart's at. You can see what it is that they are. You can tell someone who's generous and someone who's greedy. So remember these three points. Realize you are merely a steward of God's possessions and learn to be content. Partner with God in your financial plan through tithes, giving, and savings. But use wisdom in how you save and how you spend, and be generous. God bless you. Thanks. Amen. Thanks.